Wistful Thinking is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For more movie and nostalgia podcasts, visit cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
Welcome to Wistful Thinking, the podcast where we revisit pop culture from our youth to see if it's as good all grown up. I'm Jordan Poland-Clark. With me is my co-host, Kara Gail O'Regan.
Hi.
Hi. And today we are joined by Cage Club co-founder... I'm going to say that again because that was hard to say. And today we're joined by Cage Club co-founder Joey Lewandowski. Hi, Joey.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Super happy you're here. We you just reminded us off air that we are continuing Adam Sandler month, which we're not really. Because apparently this comes out on the 30th, huh?
Yep.
We just couldn't bear it anymore. We couldn't. What else would we have done? What else would we have done? What have we missed? Does anyone have any opinions?
You could have done Funny People, which is fine, but very long.
It's okay. It's like 3 hours it's long, very though, long. Yeah? Yeah.
Well, that's why when you sent in, I don't remember, maybe the two of you sent in the last episode, you're like, these are the good things he did, and that's how we're ending the month. And I was like, well, the calendar says otherwise.
What we watched instead was the 1997 David Lynch film Lost Highway, because we were kind of like kicking around ideas and like weren't really sure what to do, and I was like, you know what, this movie is like a big deal in my life. I haven't seen it in a long time. Kara, you had never seen it?
I wasn't sure, and no, I had not.
Okay, and Joey, you've seen it one time before this?
I've only seen it twice now ever, and both times were essentially with you, or because you wanted me to watch it.
Did we watch it together the first time?
We did. In I think maybe your mom's old house?
I believe that. This movie... when I went to college, I went to many, many colleges. The first one was Clark University, and I took a bunch of film theory classes there, and the first one that I took was taught by this professor who showed us this movie, which now I don't understand why. If you're teaching a film theory class and you want to do David Lynch, you don't show this movie. This was after Mulholland Drive had come out. You do Eraserhead, then you do Blue Velvet, then you do Mulholland Drive, and you don't even talk about this movie. I don't get why this is what he showed us, but I liked it a lot when I saw it and was like, oh, movies, okay, yeah. So it holds a place in my heart, but is not definitely not one of David Lynch's best movies, right?
No, I think this is sort of, it exists in that weird kind of space where he had done Twin Peaks and Fire Walk with Me in the early 90s, and then before he does Mulholland Drive, this is what he does. And it's...
This movie, essentially is Mulholland Drive, also.
It's Bobo. To use your word, it's Bobo Mulholland Drive.
He asked for a mulligan, and then he made Mulholland Drive.
Well, do you know when was the... Because Mulholland Drive was supposed to be a TV series. Was that after? I think that was probably after this.
It had to be, because this was 1997, and the movie came out in 2001, so it would have had to have been stuck somewhere for a long time if it was around when this was around. Okay, quick overview of Lost Highway if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, good luck with that.
I can do this.
Well, the amazing thing is, if you read the wiki plot summary, it makes it seem like a straightforward, normal-ish movie. It wildly excludes the fact that Patricia Arquette plays two different people, which we will get to, that confused the hell out of me when I first watched it with Jordan, because I didn't realize that
actually
was the case.
So, towards the beginning of the movie, there's a sex scene, and... a guy, it finishes perhaps sooner than his female partner would like him to, and she says sorry, and there's this shot of his face where I was like, oh no, he's gonna murder her. Is he gonna murder her? I can't handle this if he's gonna murder her. So I had to go and look at the Wikipedia article to find out if she was gonna get murdered, which, spoiler alert, she does.
She definitely gets murdered.
But we don't see it.
No.
Well, kind of, but not really, but kind of.
But in, like, the like, up top paragraph on Wikipedia, it describes the movie as a Mobius strip, and that made everything make a lot more sense to me.
Mm-hmm. That's, like, a thing that just, like, keeps going around.
It's like a math thing that you just Google it, because there's words to describe it that I don't understand, but if I see a picture of it, I get it.
Well, this movie essentially has time travel in it that doesn't also have time travel in it. Like, there's two versions of Bill Pullman, but there's not? I don't know. I don't understand. And I don't care that I don't understand.
Let's save theories.
Yeah, you know, I don't think you're supposed to understand.
I know, it's David Lynch. You're not supposed to figure it out. But, like, it's not.
Look, you know, last episode or two episodes ago, when you were talking about reading Catching the Big Fish, Jordan, and you got to that one chapter about Mulholland Drive, it's like the key in the box, and the chapter is entirely, I don't know what they mean either. I feel like I can kind of explain Mulholland Drive. I cannot even begin to explain this movie.
Mulholland Drive makes a lot more sense than this movie. Like, and this movie's almost at the point where it has the same explanation for Mulholland Drive, except then the last 15 minutes of it happen, and you're like, never mind, it doesn't make sense anymore.
Every time I thought I knew what was going on, I was like, nope, never mind. You know, like, I would think, like, oh, is this him in the past? No. Is that, is she, what? Hang on. Oh, nope, that's not what it is either. So, it was very challenging to watch, which I was not in a great space for today, because I had a migraine. But I enjoyed a lot of aspects about it, even though it took me forever to get through it.
Well, I was in a weird space-ish, too, because I woke up not at all expecting to watch this movie today, and then at 1 o'clock, Jordan's like, hey, do you want to talk about Lost Highway in 8 hours? I was like, I guess. So then my day became trying to get into the mind of David Lynch again. That's a wild thing when you don't plan that, when you're like, oh, this is just what I'm doing this afternoon. That's fun, I guess.
Yeah.
Thanks for the quick shift. I was just like, I don't know, how are we going to do, like, a David Lynch podcast and I'm not going to even invite Joey? Like, if only 50% expected you to say yes.
Well, I appreciate the invite.
Okay, I'm going to do the plot.
Good luck.
Lost Highway is about... I'm not going to use those words. Hold on. Lost Highway opens on a man and a woman, Bill Pullman, not Paxton.
Pullman, President Independence Day.
Yeah. And Patricia Arquette, who are married and live in a black box where sometimes the sun shines in.
Did you know that that's actually David Lynch's house?
No, is it?
Yeah.
He designed it.
Which
too.
Is not
he designed
surprising.
It and owns it.
At all.
Just like, I mean, every person in a David Lynch movie, like, appears to live in some kind of, like, black box with no interactions with the outside world. But this first 45 minutes of this feels, like, particularly weird. They're married, but you can tell there's something up between them, and not just in, like, a David Lynch, we don't talk like normal people way. Like, there's, like, definitely tension there. Like, you start to think maybe he thinks she's cheating on him, or, you know, there's something. There's something icky between them. And they start to get these videotapes, like, dropped on their doorstep. And, God, I already messed up. I already forgot the part where he says Dick Laurent is dead.
You also forgot the part about the saxophone.
Oh,
I tried to watch this yesterday, and I'm gonna sit here, I'm gonna draw, and I'm gonna watch this David Lynch movie, and already I, like, had tuned out, and then it, like, it's basically like a psycho jazz jump scare, because it cuts from this, like, extremely quiet scene between two people, and the movie has been so quiet, and then all of a sudden, blaring bad saxophone. Bill Pullman does not play the
really
saxophone.
Hurts your brain.
Oh, I bet to really. He is a rock star. Like, the craziest thing about this movie is that it exists in a world in which the kind of music that he is playing is popular. Like, people
I don't understand.
Are packed at this club, and they are into this music.
One of the notes that I wrote down that's, like, kind of related to that is, like, what time period is this in? Like, we're meant to believe that it's in the time period that, it, you know, 1997, around then. Mm-hmm. But, like, that music, the people, and then also, like, when later, when you're going to Pete's house, like, his parents look like they're in the 80s, and they have those, like, wood panel station wagons that look like 1,000 years old.
His,
like,
parents, you mean Gary Busey?
Yeah.
Yo, this cast is wild.
Okay, we'll get to the cast. I'm gonna finish the plot. I can do this.
Well, we're, like, 8 minutes into the movie in terms of plot summary, so keep on going, Jordan.
Okay, so, videotapes, doorstep. They start to watch the videotapes. It is a video of their house. And it gets, like, increasingly kind of creepy to where they start to bring the police in, because, like, the first videotape is just a videotape of the outside of their house. Okay, weird, but whatever. Patricia Arquette says something that's kind of funny. She says, maybe it's from a real estate agent, which in a different movie would be a funny joke, but it's a David Lynch movie, so it's not.
Oh, I found this movie hilarious. There's, like, a lot of really funny moments.
Sometimes it was. Okay, so they get increasingly creepy. There starts to be video of them, like, together in bed, and then eventually a videotape shows up that is a video of Fred murdering Renee.
Well, you also, you missed the part where he goes to the party and meets the guy with no eyebrows, who is also in his house.
Mystery man.
And then he's in bed with his wife and sees his face on her face, and then gets the tape where he murders her.
But also, okay. Do you recognize who that guy is? Like, in
the mystery man is Robert Blake.
Yes.
Who went on to murder his wife, allegedly.
Well, and was convicted of it.
Then not allegedly. He went on to do it.
No, he did.
Yeah.
And do you know he made those choices himself? Like, David Lynch did not tell him what to do. Like, he decided all that. He's got, like, white face paint, like, no eyebrows. His hair is real weird. He's real scary.
He looks like a vampire. I think he acts like a vampire, too. Like, I think he's playing like he's a vampire.
I think he's...
I read that he thought he was the devil.
I think he is murder. Like, I think he's death.
That makes sense.
Like, I don't think he's, like... Yeah, I don't think he's, like, the Grim Reaper or something. I just think he's, like, representative of, like, murder.
The reason I thought he was a vampire is because he's got the one line in this party where he's like, I don't go places where I'm not wanted. And, like, the whole vampire thing, like, you have to welcome him into your life. But he's already in the house. I don't know.
And whatever, that part definitely never makes sense. It's fine. He's not real.
You say that, like, other parts of
real.
This movie do make sense. I'm not other sure. parts of this movie do not make sense.
Nothing having to do with him makes sense. Like, not a single thing having to do with him makes sense.
Fred murders Renee.
Allegedly. Fred, we don't even know. He doesn't know.
You don't really see it. You just see, like, a grainy videotape, and that's pretty gross. Fred is sentenced to death for the murder of Renee. He's hanging out in jail, where Henry Rollins is one of the prison guards.
Yeah.
He starts to get these headaches, and he looks real bad, like he is dying. And then one day he wakes up and isn't Fred anymore. He's turned into Balthazar Getty, who plays Pete, who's like 24 years old, a much younger man. And the guards are basically like, that's a different guy. I guess we let him go. So they let him go.
But then the cops start trailing him because they're like, this is weird. Let's figure out who this kid is and how he got into the cell.
The cops are the funniest part of the movie, too.
Yeah, they say something like, this guy gets more pussy than a toilet seat.
Uh-huh. And then he's really like, hard. What a job. And the other one's like, his job or our job?
I want to, like, I don't mean to correct you, Kara, because I just want to make sure that we get that line right, because I only took a handful of notes, and they were all quotes, because I was like, there's no point in me taking notes about this movie, for multiple reasons. Because, number one, the notes are not going to make sense. Number two, I'm watching it close enough that I'm just going to remember. But number three, I just see number one. Like, it just things aren't going to make sense. But every quote I took, every quote I wrote down, was a quote that had cursing in it. Like, I think the foul language, if you will, for lack of a better phrase, in this movie is exceptional. And the quote is, fucker gets more pussy than a toilet seat. Like, just so casually explicit for no reason, and I love it. But there's other quotes that I'll get to later, but I just want to make sure that we get the exact profanity right.
Thank you. That is important. I think that, okay, I'm straying from the plot for a second because you brought something up. I think this is the only David Lynch movie that I can think of that, like, is, like, every character is, like, gross and profane in some way. Yeah. Like, there is no, like, lightness or innocence in, like, any of these people.
Well, Balthazar Getty is
maybe in Pete,
manipulated.
But, like, nah, yeah, like, he's dumb, but he's not innocent.
He's kind of like James. Like, he fits into the Twin Peaks world, right? Like, he's sort of James Hurley, kind of.
No, but James Hart is really good, don't you think? And he's like,
I think this is James corrupted,
maybe?
No, he's
not. Maybe. Anyway, yeah, I think that, to me, is a difference between this and, like, all of this. This is why this is his horror movie. I don't think this is a horror movie, but if David Lynch were to make a horror movie, like, this is the one.
It is my true belief that all movies are horror movies, if you look at them right. And all David Lynch movies are definitely horror movies.
Well, yeah, but I wouldn't be like, oh, you love horror? Watch Lost Highway.
Well, I posted that thing to you, that Entertainment Weekly, at some point in history, ranked this as the 23rd scariest movie of all time. But, like,
yeah,
I don't even
weird.
Think it's...
It's not scary.
Mulholland Drive is scarier.
Yes.
Fire Walk With Me is scarier. Inland Empire is probably scarier. Blue Velvet is scarier.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this isn't even, like, maybe top five
Eraserhead
scary
Eraserhead is scarier.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Wild at Heart...
But there's, like, there's gore
not
in this.
Scary.
There's, like...
Oh, that's scary.
Deeply fucked up, I don't know what's going on, and I'm deeply uncomfortable feeling throughout the whole movie that I think is probably off-putting to people. I don't know. That's a weird list to put it on, though.
Okay, Pete wakes up in the jail. I'm gonna do this. We're like an hour in now.
Just about.
Oh, by the way, this movie is way too long.
It's long.
I think once we get past the Bill Pullman part, like, as much as I like him,
no,
in,
I totally
in
agree.
Day, once we get past that first 45 minutes, I think the middle part of this is, like, a great movie on its own. I think you need the beginning part to set up who knows what the actual end is. But so without the beginning, there wouldn't be, like, the kind of twist at the end. But I think the middle part, like, once Pete is Pete, like, that is where the movie starts to really pick up. And I think that's where it gets really good.
Also, Patricia Arquette has red hair in the first half of the movie. And I was like, ooh, Patricia Arquette looking good with red hair. And then halfway through the movie, she shows up with blonde hair looking even better. So
I know, she looks great both times.
Always surprising.
She has her dark self and her light self, because the dark hair Patricia Arquette only wears brown and black, mm-hmm. and the light hair wears white. Mm. The first half of this movie has no color. Everything is brown or black or, like, dark red.
Yes, that's true.
And then there are colors in the second part. Okay, Pete goes home. Nobody will tell him what happened. Something happened to him on the night. And we never find out either, right?
No, well, we see,
like, miss that.
We see in prison, Bill Pullman's having visions of a cabin blowing up, and also...
But that's just what happens later.
I guess, but also he sees Pete, like, he sees Pete, like, he sees who he is, who he becomes? I don't know.
Okay.
But his whole family has matching leather jackets.
And, yes... And his dad is Gary Busey, and I don't think his mom is anyone famous, right?
I didn't recognize her. I don't know.
So he goes back to work at an auto shop where Richard Pryor is his boss.
Uh-huh.
Richard Pryor, in his last movie role before he died, is his boss.
And a coworker is Jack Nance in his last movie role before he died.
Oh, I didn't know that one. Yeah.
They shot this... He died in December. This came out in January. Like, came out right after his death.
So we meet a customer of his named Mr. Eddie, who's Robert Loggia, who is a lot like,
well, so the
Dennis Hopper,
yes.
in Blue Velvet,
so,
whose name is,
I don't remember,
Jack?
But yeah, but the reason, I'm sure, Carrie, you read this, but Robert Loggia wanted that Dennis Hopper role, and he waited for, like, 3 hours to audition for David Lynch, and David Lynch was like, oh, it was already cast, and then Robert Loggia went on this like epic tirade, just chewing out, reaming out David Lynch, like, how dare you, blah blah blah, and it's just stuck in his brain for 12 years or whatever, to the point where when he needed to cast his part, he called up Robert Loggia, and he came and did the part for him. Like, his anger was so memorable that he got cast in this movie more than a decade after Blue Velvet.
Yeah, and he gives that great yelling monologue about tailgating.
It's the best scene in the movie, by a mile.
It's pretty great. Yeah. Okay, so Mr. Eddie,
Frank
kind
Booth.
Of scary guy.
Frank Booth in Blue Velvet, Dennis Hopper. Frank Booth.
Frank. I was close. I said Jack. Whatever. Okay. Right. Mr. Eddie is really scary, has a bunch of cars, and comes in one day with blonde Patricia Arquette, who all of the dudes fall in love with. And
well, she gets out of the car, and it's all, like, slow motion, and she looks like an absolute angel, and it's, like, Lou Reed is playing, and she just, I mean, I fell in love with her in that moment, too. How could you not?
And she's a different person, right?
Yeah. My understanding, based on a photograph that we see later in the movie, is that they're twin sisters.
But then the photograph we see again later.
No, but then she disappears from that photograph.
Oh, boy.
Okay, save this. We're like, I'm almost there.
You're almost halfway there.
God, I'm not even almost there. Okay. So she comes back the next day and asks Pete for a date. And he's like, oh, this seems like a bad idea. But she's like, no, we're going. And so then they just start having sex all the time forever. Mm-hmm. And he falls in love with her. And
because how can you not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he's just, like, dumb and confused. Like, he just doesn't, like, poor kid.
Well, he seems to be suffering from some sort of brain injury or a brain tumor or something. Like, I mean, that's, like, if you want to, like, put this movie in any sort of realm of reality, which I think is probably, like, not worth it because it's nonsense. Not total nonsense, but David Lynch nonsense. Like, both of these guys have something wrong, very, very wrong with their brain. Like, they're both having these terrible headaches, nosebleeds, whatever. They're losing time. So, like, that's not great. They should probably see a doctor.
And very best case scenario is he woke up one day and was in prison and didn't know how he got there.
Yeah.
Like, that's best case scenario.
Is not
well, and then
a
very
good
morning. That would make the very best case scenario for Bill Pullman what is that he woke up one day and didn't exist.
Yeah.
I guess.
And then all of a sudden he existed again?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
I don't know if it's like linear time though, you know what I mean? Like it being a Mobius strip is that like it's all always happening.
Right. Well, okay, and there's a line
in the
movie.
The beginning is the end, it's the beginning and
there's a line in the movie that kind of explains that, and I half wrote it down, but I didn't write the whole thing down because it was kind of long. Also, I was writing in the car, and I don't know if I can read my handwriting. Maybe I did. Well, there's another line. This is not the one I was thinking of, but Bill Pullman, Fred, says, I like to remember things my own way, how I remember them, mm-hmm. not necessarily the way they happened, because he's saying that he doesn't like video cameras.
Yeah.
So that, like, explains it a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's also, like, kind of a meditation on the nature, the fallible nature of human memory and how we all only remember things the way that we want to remember them. You know? Maybe.
Yeah. Sure. Okay, so Mr. Eddie finds out that they're together, and they're both real scared of him. So, Patricia Arquette, what is her blonde name? Alice.
Mm-hmm.
Alice is like, yo, we gotta get out of here. I know this guy. Like, we'll rob this guy. And he was a guy who was in the Bill Pullman part of the movie, too. He was the guy that he thought his wife was cheating on him with in the first part of the movie. Andy. So she goes to Andy's house. Pete sneaks in after she's already there. He walks into just like a giant image of her in a porn that just plays for this entire scene, which he's like super shocked by.
A porn that we later find out also stars Marilyn Manson
and his bassist Twiggy. Yeah,
yeah. Okay, so he tries to knock out Andy. It doesn't work, and so then they accidentally murder him in a really gross David Lynch way.
He gets a corner of a table deeper into his skull than you would imagine possible.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It ruled.
Yeah, that was a good one.
What I like best is that later when the cops are there, they call him Dent Head.
I didn't get that.
Yeah, there's Dent Head over there.
A movie about those cops would be funny.
Yeah.
So then they take all his shit, they take his car, and they escape, and Allison's like, we have to go to this cabin, because my guy is there, and he'll get us these passports, and then we can go wherever we want.
But it also feels like Alice is about to murder him at any moment.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. You start to be like, she's lying to you. So they go to this cabin, nobody's there, they have sex outside.
On gravel.
And he's like, on the gravel.
Oh my god, okay. So I actually really loved a lot of the sex scenes in this movie. I thought that they were like really beautifully, abstractly shot in like weird and interesting ways. And this one,
especially
in
that one,
particular, I was mm-hmm. like, I wrote it down. I was like, this is so beautiful, but so dusty. And you shouldn't have sex, like penetrative sex, in places that are that dusty. It's not a good idea. No one's going to have fun. It's going to cause some problems. You'll be dealing with it for a while. So PSA.
David Lynch shoots like three things better than anybody else. He shoots sex scenes better, extreme violence, and fire. And all three of those things are all over this movie.
Mm-hmm. So I forget who wrote this, but I was kind of like clicking through Letterboxd reviews earlier today, and somebody described this as like not David Lynch's best movie, but like the Lynchiest of David Lynch's movies.
I thought you meant who wrote the movie. Okay, yeah. But it's
that it has like all of these, and I can't really like say yes or no to that because I have not seen the majority of his work, but that like it integrates all of these different elements and like themes that are probably executed better in other movies, but they're like all here in this one.
I feel like
they're all
I feel like Fire Walk With Me is probably the most Lynchy.
Twin Peaks is the most Lynchy. Like they're all kind of here, but in this they're kind of like just for show almost. Mm-hmm. Like they're not like used super well. You don't super care about like the characters. I don't know, they're used in like the least interesting way,
because I also think what works well about Fire Walk With Me in regards to his total picture or whatever is that he was at least creative control. He was director of like 7 episodes of the 21 or whatever that the original run of Twin Peaks was, or the 28 or whatever. Like he was involved with all of it, but only directed 7 of it. But then when he did the movie, you could see that he was able to use the violence and the language and the sexuality and the nudity and everything that he wanted to use the whole time and wasn't able to because it was on CBS or wherever, NBC and CBS. And I feel like that's where it really kicked in. And then the new one, The Return, is like the most, like it's just him, you know, having a music video at the end of every episode because he can do that, because he's allowed to do that. You know what I mean? Like it's just a continuation of all of the themes and all of his interests in the world that sort of most defines who he is as an artist.
This sex scene also, I think, has like what feels like, even though this is like her betraying him, and we like are starting to get the feeling that she's like not being super honest with him, it like for some reason, like the way it's lit and the song that plays is like the only lightness in the movie. It's I don't think it's Julie Cruz, but it's a very Julie Cruz like song that plays, and it's the only, I don't know, it's the only song in this, I want to say it's the only song that's sung by a woman.
I think you're right, because I was looking at this has a very interesting soundtrack.
It's a great soundtrack. Trent Reznor produced it.
Yeah.
And Nine Inch Nails wrote The Perfect Drug for this song.
For this movie?
Sorry.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Didn't know that. Friend's wedding song. Interesting choice.
I love that song. Not for a wedding, but I love that song.
The Smashing Pumpkins are on this.
Smashing Pumpkins, Marilyn Manson, David Bowie, Rammstein.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever gotten into it on Wistful Thinking, but a Wistful Thinking appropriate topic, my obsession with the Smashing Pumpkins.
Whoa, we could do a whole episode on that. I have that too.
Really?
It was the first concert that I went to. Like, that was just for me when I was, like, 12. Like, Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness was the first album that, like, I was like, I want that album, and I bought it. Oh, okay. Yeah, we could do that. Do you know what I really want? Do you know what we should get together? I want the Zero shirt.
Oh, I had one.
Oh, God, I got rid of it.
I got rid of it.
I really want that shirt.
I don't have any of my Smashing Pumpkins t-shirts anymore. Because they were all from, like, my 8th grade chubby goth phase.
Okay, we're almost done. So they have sex outside. She says, "You'll never have me," and then he turns into Bill Pullman again. and then she's gone. Is this when the house burns down? Does that happen?
The house explodes, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And he gets in the car and drives away.
And he's being chased by cops.
No, but something happens between that. Like, how do the cops...
Well, so he goes to Robert Loggia's. He goes back to the Lost Highway Motel. And where he is. Robert Loggia is now somehow having sex with Patricia
Arquette.
Right, and
then he kills him. And then that's where it comes full circle. Yeah. So, yeah, he goes to the motel. Mr. Eddie is there. His name is not Mr. Eddie. His name is Dick Laurent. Dick Laurent has sex with Fred's wife, Renee, who is still alive again. Again? Alive before? I don't know. He murders Dick Laurent and then goes to his own door and hits the buzzer and tells himself on the inside that Dick Laurent is dead, which happened at the beginning of the movie also. And then the cops chase him, and he drives real fast.
And then he kind of has, like, a breakdown of some kind and, like, maybe is transforming back to Pete or not. I don't know. And then the movie ends.
Yeah. It looks like his face is going to explode.
Oh, yeah. So there were... It was this shot and also his aggressive saxophoning at the beginning of the movie. And then again, somewhere in the middle that was lit with a strobe light. And I couldn't look at the screen because that triggers.
Oh, there's a part where when Pete's walking down the hallway is also kind of strobey.
So
his face is bleeding.
Yeah, that was frustrating. Oh, can I talk more about the saxophoning though? So Bill Pullman?
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. He did not know how to play the saxophone. Did not really learn how to play the saxophone. Just learned that one specific solo on the saxophone, and I just thought that that was a really interesting approach to that, like, because I don't know, wouldn't you want to, like, learn to, like, play, like, I don't know, it's just that saxophone scene, I can't get it out of my brain, and I couldn't even really look at the screen because of the flashing lights, but it just is gonna haunt me for the rest of my life, maybe.
Interesting. It reminds me of the scene in Wild at Heart where Sailor and oh my god, what's her name? Lula. Sailor and Lula go dancing. And they're like heavy metal dancing. It's the first time we see them heavy metal dance. Those two scenes remind me of each other. The Wild at Heart scene is much better.
I have not seen Wild at Heart, but it does. It reminded me of the Lost Boys because the sexy sax man in that.
Well, no pressure, Kara, but Wild at Heart is my favorite Nicolas Cage movie. So.
Oh, okay.
It's a good movie.
On this network, founded around that, it is my favorite. And Kara, our Jordan talked about it twice with us. She was on the original episode, then revisited with us. So.
It's David Lynch's
Wizard of Oz.
You know, Wizard of Oz. What else could you ask for?
With Laura Palmer as the Good Witch for like 30 seconds. That's kind of a spoiler, but not really, because whatever.
Did we get through the whole cast of this? Did we name
not
all
even,
the amazing
not
people
even,
in this?
Like,
okay, who did we miss? Let's
I don't
see.
Know. I mean, I think we, like, touched on all of the bigger names that we would know, but it just was, like, I laughed a bunch of times during the opening credits and then forgot that all of those people were going to be in the movie. So every time they showed up, I'd be like, oh my god, Henry Rollins, what are you doing here?
I think the only one that we missed was Giovanni Ribisi as one of Pete's friends. Who was in, like, one scene.
I didn't even catch that, although I did see his name in the credits.
He's just one of, like, the five people who stroll into the house, and the only one that we ever see from that group again is the girlfriend, who is then promptly forgotten when angelic Patricia Arquette shows up.
Well, and then she tries to come back, and then she yells, mm-hmm. and he deserves it.
Mm-hmm. When the police come to Bill Pullman's house, too, I think after they get the first few tapes that are real creepy, they, like, call the cops, and they're like, somebody is, like, in our house taping us. And they come over, and they ask him if he's a musician. And one of the cops asks, what's your axe? And Bill Pullman replies, tenor. Tenor saxophone. Like James Bond. It was insane.
I wrote down, this was, like, I took good notes for the beginning of this, and then by the end I was just like, ugh, never mind, this doesn't make sense. But my explanation for this movie at the begin, or, like, right when we find out, like, what Pete is like, my explanation for this movie was that, like, Bill Pullman, Fred, is just, like, a dude who's, like, pissed off that he can't, like, satisfy his wife, so she's cheating on him. And so he turns himself into this young dude who just, like, fucks everyone.
Including his wife.
Including his wife, yeah.
But who is also, like, so, like, horribly jealous and terrified that he's going to lose her at any moment, too. Like, I feel like both of those characters, they're, like, on either ends of the same
fear. Well, he couldn't totally turn himself into a whole different person.
Yeah. Interesting.
So the mom, I just looked it up, was played by Lucy Butler, who just seems like a character actress of sorts, but she's most known for this, for Candace Dayton, but her number two credit, or at least most popular on IMDb, is another movie you covered on this podcast, The Net, starring Sandra Bullock. She played Female Officer. How could you forget her as Female Officer?
Female Officer. Wait.
I could not tell you.
I don't know, because now that you say that, I'm like, oh, is she the woman who is, like, fake Sandra Bullock?
Now I have to. She kind of looks like her.
Yeah.
Because this is only 2 years after The Net, so this is basically, you think, roughly what she looked like in The Net, so.
Mm-hmm.
She could have passed for Sandy in this.
Oh, no. The person that I'm thinking of is credited as Imposter.
Ooh.
The warning at, like, with the rating at the beginning of this movie says bizarre violence and sexuality, which I really appreciated.
Yeah. The first two quotes that I wrote down are basically say the same thing. The first one is just, that's fucking crazy, man, which I don't know in what context that was, but could apply to a lot of this movie. And then the second one was, Captain, this is some spooky shit we got here.
I like that part. Yeah. Too. I wrote that one down also. I found the other quote that I was thinking of. When Pete meets Mystery Man and they have basically the same conversation that Fred and the Mystery Man have at first, and then it strays away from that. And the Mystery Man says, in the East, the Far East, when a person is sentenced to death, they're sent to a place where they can't escape, never knowing when an executioner may step up behind them and fire a bullet into the back of their head. So, it's like, I don't know, he's somehow acknowledging that Pete's still just a dude on death row, mm-hmm. or something.
Yeah, interesting.
But not in a way that makes sense. Like, it doesn't actually tie anything together.
Yeah. There was another moment in the prison with Henry Rollins and the other, like, prison officer guy, and one of them is like, I don't know, that wife killer guy looks like pretty banged up, he, like, seems like he's not okay. And the other one is like, which wife killer guy? And then they both laugh. And it made me laugh so hard. And I was like surprised by it, but at the same time, not that surprised by it, because it's true. Most violent, like male violent offenders do start out by abusing the women in their lives. So hilarious and factually accurate.
A twofer.
My favorite combination.
And speaking of wife abusers, David Lynch later said that this was apparently the reason he wanted to tell the story was because of the OJ trial. So this is all, not only is Robert Blake involved here, who would go on to kill his wife, but also just is all somehow sort of just based on OJ. So that's something.
Yeah. Or not based on, but just like
inspired
that
by.
Was the like ambient cultural energy that he was, you know, sponging up
right.
when he was writing this, which is interesting.
So I know that time ago, you guys did, at least a couple times, the two of you did How Do We Turn This Into a Circus Show? But did you see, I'm sure Kara saw, did you know, Jordan, that this was turned into an opera?
That was literally what I was just about to say.
Which I think if any of us, I mean, I don't want to speak for the two of you, I don't know anything about opera, but I think that could be another fun game to play. How do we turn this movie, whatever movie you're talking about, into an opera?
Yeah, I don't know.
I want to see it, but I also don't know anything about opera.
Feels like, it reminds me, just no, I didn't, because you can, there's, I think, on YouTube, a 46-minute audio score of the opera, that the first act is spoken word and the second half is sung. So if you want to hear it, I think it's on YouTube in some, either in its entirety or a lot of it or whatever. I kind of get the sense, Jordan, and I don't mean to exclude you, Kara, but Jordan is probably one of the two people in my life that knows this, that has watched this. The Industrial Symphony number 1, remember when we watched that with Wild at Heart?
I was just telling someone how much I want to make a show with a car on the stage.
Yeah. I feel like the opera is probably this movie's equivalent of Industrial Symphony number 1, where it's just like an industrial sort of inspired by, but not really about, or I don't, you know what I mean? Like just this weird whatever. So Kara, just for like right around the time of Wild at Heart, Nicolas Cage and Laura Dern, who are the stars of Wild at Heart, did this thing for David Lynch called Industrial Symphony number 1, where they were in like one scene and then there was just like 35 minutes of, how would you describe it, Jordan? Just like acrobatics?
It's like movement stuff happened, but it wasn't really like, I wouldn't go as far as to call it acrobatics though.
But it has nothing to do with anything. Like it's just a thing that that exists. I'm sure it has something to do with something, but you know, good luck figuring that out. But I feel like the opera version of this is probably not made by David Lynch, but somehow related to that, the equivalent for this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. I feel like a stage version of this in general, no matter how it's done, would like almost give it more permission to not make sense and to be like way more about like the movements and the sound and the visuals of it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And kind of just like taking that in rather than like needing a plot that comes all the way together. I don't know if it would be more or less frustrating.
Well, after Gene Siskel and Robert Ebert gave the film negative reviews on their show, David Lynch issued a new poster calling the thumbs down verdict 2 more reasons to see Lost Highway and asked for his opinion. Siskel said, "I found it petty." I think that's funny.
Yeah, nobody liked this movie. And then it kind of got like a cult following, I think.
Yeah.
And I was reading, the thing that I was just reading before we started recording was the AV Club did a series called The New Cult Canon, and they would kind of, like one at a time, talk about cult movies, like newer cult movies. And they did one on Lost Highway, and it pretty much says what we said. Or it like says basically what my experiences was, which was that the first time I saw it, I was like, oh my god. And now looking back, I'm like, it's not that good.
Well, I'm definitely not surprised that people didn't like it. It's It's a thinker. I think it's also like a thing that you should probably see more than one time, but like, oh god,
it's also it's like exhausting. It's fun to watch if you like noir. Mm-hmm. And like neo-noir, because if nothing else, like, it pulls from that really, really, really well in a way that's very Lynchy. So you won't see it. You won't see something like this anywhere else, but you can see where the influences are. Mm-hmm. And that's fun.
It's also part of his, like, three movie, not really a trilogy, but, like, the three movies that he made about Los Angeles, this one, Mulholland Drive, and then Inland Empire. Did you say that already? You might have already said that.
No, I don't think we did.
I don't think so.
Okay. Well,
I just mentioned that they're both scarier than this one.
Yeah. I definitely have seen Mulholland Drive. That one I saw in a film class.
Well, that's what I think is the funniest thing, is that you didn't know if you had seen this movie. Like, I know that, like, I don't remember a lot, but I feel like... if you
here's what that was, the rest of what I was gonna say is that I also Inland Empire came out when I was in art school, and I had to go see it, like go to a screening for a class, and it was one of those movies where I like got to the movie theater, fell asleep 10 minutes in, and then woke up 10 minutes before the end. And so I've done that with a lot of movies, and I'm never sure if gotcha. I've seen a movie before or not. Like, particularly this one, I was like, I might have, but as soon as I got to that saxophone scene, I was like, oh no.
I've definitely not seen this. I've seen Inland Empire once, and it took me like 5 or 6 hours to watch the 3-hour movie, because I was just like, this is a lot to sit through. I've been meaning to rewatch it, I just haven't watched it, but I'm going too soon, I think. But it's just, because it's also way more experimental. Like, this is a beautifully shot movie. Like, I think this is maybe his most expensive movie to make. Like, Inland Empire is all shot on digital and, like, very close and very uncomfortable. And I remember it being... It's also, like, more mindfucky than this in different ways. Jordan, you've seen it, right?
I think I also fell asleep and then was like, this is 3 hours long. I don't think I care.
Well, it's, like, about... I think they're, like, making a movie, and, like, there's a point where you don't know if the movie you're watching is the movie they're making or just the movie you're watching. And it's, like, this really weird... I mean, that's sort of the key word here, but, you know, it's also 3 hours long. Like, that's a long movie. Like, this is 2:15. Mulholland Drive, I think, is like 2:30, maybe?
And this one, I had to rewind a bunch of times because I kept, like, tuning out. Not that I wasn't, like, into it, because I was. It just is, like, slow and quiet. And, like, if you're not paying attention for 30 seconds, it's like... what's happening now.
Well, I put subtitles on because, like, the first line, when the first line was like, Dick Lorana's dead, I was just like, oh, didn't hear what that said. Gotta go back. I rewound and put subtitles on. I was like, okay, here we go.
Oh, cool. Still doesn't make sense.
Well, I don't think you said, there's another trivia thing on IMDb that I'm sure you saw, that apparently someone said that to David Lynch. Like, somebody went to David Lynch's house went into his intercom and just said, Dick Lorana's dead. David Lynch rushed outside. Nobody was there. And then that became a movie. Like, I don't, like, what?
That's not the story that I read.
Well, that's what IMDb says. That might not be true. This is the gospel of, you know, wikiality of the internet.
This is what I read on Wikipedia, which is not better, but makes more sense, is that David Lynch has a neighbor whose name is also David, I guess. And so somebody came to his door and, like, said his own name, and it was very confusing. Or something like that. I don't know.
Either way, I can see how that could turn into a movie. No, I'm serious. Like, you know, like, later that day, David Lynch was, like, sitting down, getting baked, and being like, yo, wouldn't it be crazy if, like, you know, and then this movie happened.
If that was me who said that to me, but future me, maybe future
me? Exactly. Yeah.
The other quote that I wrote down, another great one, it's said by Mr. Eddy in the car when they go after Pete fixes the engine. He just says, smooth as shit from a duck's ass, which I guess is a thing.
I mean, have you ever seen a duck shit comes right out?
I went to Ramapo. They were...
You're thinking of geese.
Oh, okay.
Which also... comes right out. But duck shit is generally, I think, more liquid than a goose shit, which is more of a solid cylindrical shape. spend a lot of time looking at birds.
And bird poop.
Yeah. Well, you can't do one without the other, so.
So this movie was co-written by Barry Gifford. He wrote it with David Lynch. And we talked about this on Cage Club, Jordan, but you and I saw him do a reading from Wild at Heart when we saw Wild at Heart. Was that the IFC Center? Somewhere in New York.
The IFC Center, yeah.
And he had his book there and was more interested in the Yankees World Series game, I think, or the ALCS or whatever, than actually being there. But he's cool. I mean, he wrote Wild at Heart, which is awesome, so that's something.
Did you ever read the Sailor and Lula books?
Yeah, I read the first six, and then he put out the new one or whatever. I didn't read the new one, but I read the original six.
Are they nice?
They like are. I mean, the best one is Wild at Heart by a mile.
Okay.
So, like, of the six...
Which is the first... Is that the first one?
Of the six, they're only, I think, in, like, three of them. And, like, the rough story is that, like, Sailor is in and out of jail all of his life because he's just... That's the kind of person that he is. And Lula just gets on. And then eventually, I think, I want to say, they wind up together, like, in the end. Because they're, you know, that whole movie is like they're meant to be together. That's true love.
It's like a really beautiful love story.
Yeah. And then there's, like, you know, Perdita Durango, who I think is maybe a character in Wild at Heart, but maybe not. And she's got a story or two about her. I don't know. I think it's worth reading, but it's not, like, nothing is as good as Wild at Heart. It's just sort of a continuation of their story, but the best part of their story is what you've already seen a couple times.
Okay. Okay, does anyone else have anything to add about Wild at Heart before we play a quick Adam Sandler game?
About Wild at Heart or about Lost Highway?
Shit. I'm tired.
Well, I like that this is a very short episode, and the entire thing was basically just getting through the plot.
Just me trying to see the plot. Well, no, we took a lot of detours.
But no, I have nothing else to add about Lost Highway, I don't think.
I think you should see it
if you're out there. You should see it. I think it's difficult to find. Is it or is it not?
I don't know. I paid for it on Amazon.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Because I have the DVD, so I watch it on the DVD.
But don't have it be your first David Lynch movie. Don't start here. Yeah, no, I don't. Don't start here.
Well, I'm glad. I mean, you know, I do like this movie, and I don't think anybody is wrong I don't think anybody's wrong for liking this movie, but there was a while, Jordan, where you were like, Lost Highway, and then everything else is behind it. And I was like, ooh. Like, I remember watching it, just like, ooh, that's kind of, like, that's
bold
it.
Bold statement.
I'm here to say that I was wrong.
Well, I mean, the soundtrack is great.
The soundtrack is great, and I listen to it all the time. Okay. I feel like I'm ripping off one of your games, Joey. We're going to play the cast Adam Sandler in this movie game.
Okay.
Oh, no.
Joey, you want to go first? How would you cast him in this movie?
Are we putting him in an existing role or a new role or whatever?
In an existing role.
Okay. I think he could probably honestly do a lot of these. I don't know how well he could do a lot of these. I think him as one of the cops could work pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I guess, are we saying Adam Sandler in 1997 or current Adam Sandler or any age Adam Sandler?
You can use whichever one you want.
I think a cop would be pretty good. I think a prison guard could be good. I don't know that he could do... Maybe he could. Maybe one of you wants to defend him. I don't know that he could do either the Bill Pullman or the Balthazar Getty role.
I feel like when... I don't want to watch him have that much sex, I don't think. But I feel like...
I definitely don't either.
Like a young Adam Sandler could do the Balthazar Getty role really differently.
Mm-hmm.
But could do it by just being like a little bit dumb.
And I also think maybe, to sort of contradict what I just said, an older Adam Sandler maybe could do the Bill Pullman role? I don't know.
Well, I think you, Mr. Eddie, we know he can yell.
Yeah, that was going to be my thing. Because I could totally see him beating, like, you know, trailing somebody and then beating the shit out of them.
I think he definitely would need a smaller role, though. I don't know that he... I mean, even though he could do a bigger thing, I think smaller part would be good. I think that's sort of where, in a way, I think a lot of actors, you know, Keanu, as he gets older, Mike and I watched all of his movies, and he's sort of doing what Cage is not, in that he's taking smaller roles in more interesting movies, and, like, only being on screen for 5 or 10 minutes, but being, like, a really cool 5 or 10 minute part. Like, mm-hmm. Carol, when you were talking an episode or two ago about how you saw The Bad Batch, and, like, he has him as the Dream. Like, he's not in that movie a lot, but he's awesome as the Dream.
I want a Dream movie. A whole Dream movie. I think he's such a good, charismatic cult leader. I would join that cult.
Do you know that Anna Lily Amirpour's next movie, I think her next movie, before she does the Cliffhanger reboot, she's doing a movie that's set in New Orleans that stars, or second or third build, Mr. Zac Efron.
How about that?
About werewolves, I think? I don't know.
All right. Sure. Give me those hairy abs. Whatever.
But I think...
His abs are hairy now?
Well, no, but I mean, if he's a werewolf...
No, but they would be if he was a werewolf.
I followed you, Carol.
Oh. Again, I'm very
only
tired.
Only a few evenings a month, you know.
I think... So, what I was saying is that I think Adam Sandler is the kind of actor that I've liked him in things, and I think if he had a small part that he was able to sort of focus all of his energy in a couple scenes, whether he's a cop or Mr. Eddie or a whatever, I think it could work really well. I don't know that I necessarily need him as a lead in stuff anymore.
You know, who else? He could be definitely the mystery man. He would make completely different, weird choices, you know.
He wouldn't just talk in, like, the Billy Madison voice.
It's like weird little boy voice.
Like the gibberish language.
So, Jordan, what's your answer? Are you doing the Balthazar Getty role, or do you think he'd be better somewhere else?
No, I would put him in, like, the Jack Nance or Richard Pryor role, probably. Like, working at the car place.
So someone who was about to die.
Yeah, I guess so.
All right.
Or young Adam Sandler could have been, like, you know, one of Pete's friends.
Like the Ribisi role.
Or maybe... Do you think that now Adam Sandler could have been the Gary Busey role?
Absolutely, 100%. But let me tell you, when Gary Busey showed up, what a delight. Have you ever seen... Oh, God, what is that movie called?
Hider in the House?
Fuck. No.
Oh, Hider in the House is great, where he lives in an attic in a house owned by other people.
Is it funny or not
funny? Oh, no, it's a horror movie, kind of.
Oh, there's a Camille Nanjiani joke that is that.
It's a movie called Drop Zone from 1994. A tough cop teams up with a professional skydiver to capture a renegade computer hacker on the run from the law. And I think, if I remember correctly, Gary Busey is the renegade computer hacker.
That sounds like half of Point Break and then half of, like, just other 90s movies like Hackers and the Net.
But with skydiving. It's...
Well, there's skydiving in Point Break.
Is there? Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it in a very, very long time. I need to revisit that one.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, I do.
Does anyone else have anything to add about Lost Highway?
I don't think I do.
I feel like I did, but it's not in my brain right now.
Is this a good movie?
I think so. I think it's interesting,
Cold
for sure.
Gay?
I think it depends. Obviously, it is a subjective thing, but also depends on, like, how strictly you adhere to the idea of, like, what a movie is. Because if you walk into this expecting some sort of, like, tight narrative structure, like, you're going to be extremely disappointed and think that this is a garbage movie. But if you just, like, let it happen, let it wash over you, as you should with all weird movies, then yes it is.
All right, Joey, do you have anything to plug?
Sure. So there's a bunch of shows that I'm on the network. The big thing is every other Tuesday, Too Fast, Too Forever, which Jordan, you have been on. Kara will be on the next lap in its entirety. So later this year.
So excited for her.
By the end of summer-ish, she'll be on the entire thing. We just started lap 4. So we did the Fast and the Furious, the first one. Then we did a bonus episode that came out this week, 2 days ago, of the Turbocharged Prelude, which brings from the first movie to the second movie. And then coming out next week is Too Fast, Too Furious. So later in the summer, I think September-ish, maybe, or October? I gave you the date recently, Kara. I don't remember what it is. You're going to be on the entire lap, all, at that point, 9 movies. So check that out. Every Friday, Mike and I are doing the Tom Club, Tom Hanks, Tom Cruise. So tomorrow's movie is a Tom Hanks movie, Nothing in Common, which is a very bad movie. And then next week is Born on the 4th of July, the Tom Cruise movie, directed by Oliver Stone. So go check those out.
Cool. Jordan was just on an episode.
Yep, I was just on the Rain Man episode, which if you're listening on the day this comes out, came out 2 weeks ago?
Came out last week. Came out 6 days ago. The most recent TomTom episode.
Yep, I watched Rain Man for the first time. Kara, you got anything?
No, not really.
Cool.
Oh, I do want to plug one other thing.
Follow me on Instagram, whatever. What were you
saying? I want to plug one thing that I have nothing to do with, but sometimes you talk about other things you've seen. If you two have not seen it yet, or if your listeners have not seen it yet, please go on Netflix and watch The Lonely Island Presents the Unauthorized Bash Brothers Experience. Because
I'm like
it
halfway
is
through it.
Amazing.
Yeah, I'm like halfway through it. I don't know why, but I didn't finish it yet.
It's a whole 30 minutes long. It's great. See that, and then also I think you should leave. Did you talk about that? Did you see that sketch show on Netflix?
I don't know if we talked about it, but I again watched like half of that and then abandoned it. But
yeah,
the first half
I had
was
a hard
incredible.
Time with that. Didn't love it.
So
I loved it.
It's so good. Those are my two plugs that have nothing to do with me. Go watch I Think You Should Leave and also The Bash Brothers Experience.
Cool. You can find Kara on Instagram at Bimps.
Mm-hmm.
You can find me on Instagram at JordoPC. You can find our show at Wistful Pod. You can find the Cage Club Network. What is the Cage Club Network's handle, Joey?
Cage Club Pod.
That's what I would have said, but I didn't want to get it wrong. thanks for listening, Joey. Thanks for last minute coming and talking about this movie.
Thank you for inviting me.
We will talk to y'all next time. Bye.
This magic moment, so different and so new, was like any other, until I met you, and then it happened. It took me by surprise. I knew that you felt it too. See it by the look in your eyes. Sweeter than wine, softer than a summer's night. Everything I wanna have whenever I hold you tight. This magic moment, while your lips are close to mine, last forever. Forever till the end of time. So why won't you dance with me? Hey, hey. Why won't you dance with me? This magic moment, so different and so new, was like any other, until I met you, and then it happened. You know, it took me by surprise. I knew that you felt it too, by the look in your eyes. Sweeter than wine, ooh, softer than a summer's night. Everything I want, I have. whenever I hold you tight. This magic moment. Save the last dance for me.